Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The king said, to transgress the laws of respectful behavior towards the Brahmins is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dwadasi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O Brahmins, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting with the Brahmins, the king reached this decision. For according to the Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. So this is the purport. When Maharaj Ambarish, in his dilemma, consulted the Brahmins about whether he should break the fast or wait for Durvasa Muni, apparently they could not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnava, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarisha himself decided in the presence of the Brahmins that he would drink a little water. For this would confirm that the fast is broken, but would not transgress the laws for receiving a Brahmin. In the Vedas it is said, apos nati ta naiva shitam naiva na shitam. This Vedic injunction declares that the drinking of water may be accepted as eating or as not eating. Sometimes in our practical experience, we see that some political leader, adhering to satyagraha, will not eat but will drink water. Considering that drinking water will not be eating, Maharaj Ambarisha decided to act in that way. Brahmanadi krame dosho dvadashayam vadashyam yadaparane yakritva sadume buyat adharma vanamams prishet ambasa kevale nata karishe rataparanam ahur abhakshanam vipra yasitam nashitam chatat. The king said, to transgress the laws of respectful behavior toward the Brahmins is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dwadasi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O Brahmins, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting with the Brahmins, the king reached his decision. For according to the Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskya Dhyate Siddharane. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chetasa Sarvakaramani Mai Sanyasya Matparaha Bhudiyo Gama Pashitya Machitak Satatam Bhava. That in all activities and for the results, just depend upon me and work always under my protection in such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Within that verse, everything is explained about Krishna consciousness, at least summarized. The first thing is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna, which is known as Matparha. One should not think that Krishna is some ordinary personality. But first one should understand that everything is Krishna's property. Even our body, which we think to be ours and free to do with what we want, is actually the property of Krishna. A learned person, he probably said, preliminarily, a learned person understands matrivat paradvareshu, paradvareshu loskrivat, Atmavat Sarabhuteshu Yakpashiti Sapanditaha. Preliminary for to become civilized, at least a human being, that one has to learn how to see all the ladies except for one's own wife as one's mother. And to see other persons' property to be like garbage in the street, and to see all living entities to be just like one's own self. Such a person, he's actually learned. Not that learning means to have some degrees, some academic degrees. Such learning does not actually help anyone nowadays. most learning is to become a technician, and such learning simply confuses one as to what is the actual goal of life. Tevidu swarthikatim hi Vishnu darashaya ye bahya artamanina. People don't know that the actual goal of life is to obtain Vishnu, and therefore they become attracted to some material object. And andaya tandir upagiya manas te pisha tantra urudami bada. Such persons, they become educated or followers of other persons who also cannot solve their problems. Knowledge is meant to give us a vision by which we can solve our problems. And as we've heard before, the real problem is old age, disease, and death, and then birth again. So, unless these problems are solved, all the other problems are insignificant. As we know, modern scientists are very proud because they've invented the electric light bulb. It is not that before people couldn't see, and then they invented the electric light bulb, and now people can see. It is the fact that previously people could not see as well in the nighttime. In other words, they still had something like castor lamps, or they had some candles, something simple. But then they didn't strain their eyes watching television either, and watching videos and computer screens. And therefore, their eyes were undoubtedly much stronger. They didn't have to have so many glasses as we have today. So although on one side they've increased the illumination, on the other side they've weakened everyone's eyes. Similarly, as we pointed out, that they invented pesticides to kill off the bugs. So they kill off all the weak bugs and the strong bugs become more stronger. The ones that are left are the hardiest bugs, and they reproduce and they get super bugs. In the meantime, all the weak, fragile plants, they become the ones that are surviving because they're protected by the chemicals. And therefore, the bugs become stronger and the plants become weaker. So this type of progress in civilization is not actually progress. Although it may appear, for instance, now that we have an advanced civilization, so-called advancement means we have cars and airplanes and light bulbs, etc. But factually, people are weaker. They don't go for walks anymore. By the time they're 60, 70 years old, if they fall down one time, their hip is broken for life because their bodies are so fragile. So in this way, although it appears that we're increasing or progressing in civilization, factually it's not factual progress. For instance, computers, although it appears to be a convenience, it simply is an indicator of the fact that people have lost their memory. When I went to public school, we actually had a piece of paper and a pencil, because that may be out. I don't know if they make them anymore. And we used to have to add 1 plus 1 is 2, or 2 plus 2 is 4, etc. Nowadays, that's considered primitive, to put all these things into your head. Nowadays, you're just taught you punch 2, and then you punch another 2, and you punch the add, and whatever comes up with, that's the answer. In other words, people don't have the capacity to do these complicated activities anymore. So this is a sign that people's minds are becoming weaker, their intelligence is becoming more clouded, and they think that this is progress. But actual progress is to become free from these real these problems of life, namely jara, mrityu, jara, vyadi, birth, death, old age, and disease. For that, the Vedic culture was adequate. they knew what the goal of life is and what the problems of life are and how to achieve it, how to solve the problems and achieve the goal. Here, Amrish Maharaj, he has some problem. And although it may not seem like a big problem, what to do to break a fast, but under the circumstances, it was quite a big problem. So Krishna says that you should depend upon me. Because in this material world, everything is relative. Although Krishna has given so many instructions in the Vedic literature, ultimately, even a slight discrepancy, and there is problems. Especially in previous ages, this age is quite more gross, because we're so much absorbed in problems. Just like previously, Tvasta, he had the ability to chant mantras to create a demon to even fight against Indra. So Tvasta, he was a son, he was a father of Vishwarup. Indra had went to Vishwarup, who was an elevated Brahmin, and asked him to please help us in our fight against the demons. But Vishwarup, although he was one of the family members of the demigods, he also had some relatives on the demon side. So he was a very liberal Brahmin, so he couldn't refuse the demigods. So he became their spiritual master and began to offer oblations for the sake of the demigods, sacrifices. Unfortunately for him, a few of his other relatives came by to bother him and told him, you have to help us too against the demigods. So being a liberal Brahmin, he said, it's good not to get to put your feet out like that. Can you help us against the demigods? So he said, yes, I can help you against the demigods. I'll offer a few oblations into the fire. So he offered some oblations into the fire on behalf of the demigods, and the demigods became, on behalf of the demons, the demigods, by their mystic power, could understand that this Brahmin, he's helping our enemies. He's a double agent, so to speak. So they decided to execute him. So they went and cut off his three heads. He had one head, I think he was drinking nectar, another wine, another eating, drinking ordinary food. So they cut off his three heads. And Tvasta, his father, who was a great Brahmin, he became very disturbed and decided to kill Indra. So he had a sacrifice arranged, and he was chanting mantras, and one of the mantras he made short instead of long, and instead of getting an enemy of Indra, he got a demon whose enemy was Indra. So a little mistake like that, and he didn't get the result. On the other hand, in this age, we have no idea even how to chant a Vedic mantra, but to speak of making mistakes. The Vedic mantra is just so complicated that the letter A, for instance, in the Sparsha alphabet, there are 19 different ways of chanting the letter A, or A. And each way you chant it has a different effect. In order to learn how to chant that mantra, just the letter A, but to speak of the 30-something other letters, in order to learn that, one would have to follow a very strict diet, be born in a Brahmin family, the parents must have had to perform the Garbha Dhan Sanskara, one has to be raised from childhood in complete purity, celibacy, sense control. One would have to live in the ashram of the guru, learn under his instructions, committing severe austerities. And then one would gradually learn after so many years how to chant each one of the letters. So most of us can't even pronounce our own language, but to speak of Sanskrit. What to speak of learning each letter 19 different ways. And to do what's required. Therefore, it's not possible to understand how strictly one would have to follow the Vedic culture in order to actually get the effect of what the Vedic culture gave. The Vedic culture was so perfect that the kings would perform sacrifices to the demigods, and that they personally would not necessarily do them. They'd take part in the sacrifices, but the Brahmins would chant the mantras so perfectly that the weather, for instance, was always perfect. There was always a sequence of seasons. In India, there are 6 seasons. In the Western world, generally, there are 4. Nowadays, of course, there are like 20 seasons in the Western world. There's only 4 official ones. But in India, there are 6. But every year, even before, Prabhupada said, even before they start to worship Ramakrishna in Bengal, and then everyone went, the whole consciousness of the country went, or the state went to hell. Before that, he said, every year they knew exactly what day the monsoons would come on. But this is because of the performance of sacrifice. Previously, the seasons would be in their sequence. Prabhupada said, at night it would rain, and during the daytime there would be sun. And as we know, King Ugrasena, in his kingdom, one Brahmin came before him complaining that in the presence of a father, a son has died, that this was a big scandal. Not that he came before him and said that my son was murdered by the king or something like that. That was probably what the scandal would be. The king hired someone and murdered my son. No, in the presence of a father, the son has died, so the king must be a rascal. No one would take that very seriously nowadays. But the Vedic kings are so responsible, Prabhupada says, that because of their execution of sacrifice, everything would go according to the natural laws. But here we find that sometimes there, even a slight discrepancy from the worldly point of view, there may be some problems, especially because in the material world we're dealing with persons who are envious, and therefore they may not act completely according to the Vedic ideals. Krishna's conclusion is not in the Bhagavad Gita so much to follow the Vedic injunctions, but just depend upon me. If one can accept, and if one can understand and accept the existence and personality of Godhead and depend upon him, then he solves so many problems. Of course, Maharaj Ambarish was a Matparaha devotee, dependent on Krishna, but we don't find that he acted completely independently. One who's completely dependent upon Krishna, he'll also understand things in relationship to Krishna and who's to be consulted. He didn't go to an old Maharaj Ambarish, didn't ask mental speculators or some mystic, what should I do? He asked qualified personalities, the Brahmins, what he should do under the circumstance. Because for material considerations, the Brahmins were considered worthy of being consulted because they were supposed to be expert in such activities, how the laws of material nature work. Although they may not be so expert in spiritual dealings, understanding how the laws of the spiritual world work, Brahmin means he has to be expert in understanding how the laws of material nature work. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish consulted the Brahmins, but he didn't get a very clear answer. Therefore, the first principle is to do whatever we're doing to please Krishna, but pleasing Krishna, in order to understand what to do, there's some consultation is generally necessary. Of course, for ordinary dealings, whether we should get up at 3:15 or 3:30, we don't have to consult a board of Brahmins. For normal activities, we don't. But for some activities, it's worthy to consult persons of a superior nature to find out what is actually, what will please Krishna or bring us to a more full consciousness of Krishna. So the second part of one's devotional service should be to find out what Krishna wants. through the civil succession from Krishna's bona fide representative. Then if one does that, then he's assured of becoming Krishna conscious. He's sure of becoming Krishna conscious. But Krishna says, Mat chitak sarva durgani, mat prasada tarishasi, atat chitvam ahankaram, no shoshasi vinangshati. That if you become conscious of me, then you'll pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If however you act, not hearing from me, but act with false ego, then you'll be lost. As we can see here in the story, that Maharaj Ambarish, he consulted with the Brahmins. They couldn't give him a very good answer or an adequate answer. He used his own intelligence. He came up with a Vedic injunction and followed it. But still, if he wasn't doing it for Krishna, he would have been in quite a bit of trouble, even following the Vedic culture. What saved him is that he was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, the conclusion is that one may do everything according to one's best in the material world, still find himself in quite a bit of difficulty. But if one is doing it for Krishna, then Krishna will give one all facilities. Anyas chintayantomam ye jana paripasite tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga shemam viham yaham. For those who are constantly devoted, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. In other words, although other considerations should be there, so many considerations may be there, but the ultimate consideration is Krishna consciousness. Without Krishna consciousness, everything is incomplete and there is no solution or any real progress in our activities. Prabhupada emphasized so much our taking shelter of Krishna in Krishna consciousness, although at the beginning the devotees had one blue sock and one red sock. He wasn't as concerned with that as the fact that they were chanting Hare Krishna. And then after that, he was concerned that they were following brahminical principles, such as keeping clean, being regulated in their lives, because only in the mode of goodness can one understand Krishna or follow the principles by which one will be able to elevate himself to understand Krishna more fully. Therefore, Prabhupada emphasized above everything, Krishna consciousness and those activities which will maintain one in Krishna consciousness. He wasn't so much concerned about big, big plans or methods of doing something new or unique to spread Krishna consciousness or to be in Krishna consciousness or whatever. Probably he was more concerned that one follows the standard formulas in such a way as to produce one's, purify one's consciousness and come to the platform of pure devotion to Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? Yes. I don't know what songs you're referring to.
The songs in the soundtrack of the play.
What do you think, Maharaji? Do they become spiritual? I don't think that we're trying to spiritualize these songs. I don't think that's the purpose. Depends what the actual result is. If the songs help you remember Krishna, then it's spiritual. If the songs help you forget Krishna, then obviously how much you may claim it to be spiritual, it's not very spiritual. It's a question of association, whether it's spiritual or not. If the purpose of the person playing the songs is that they want to please Krishna, then at least they have half the formula proper. At least half the formula is that they want to please Krishna and their spiritual master. Now, to find out whether it's pleasing to Krishna and the spiritual master and to the Vaishnavas, then they have to consult. Some songs may be acceptable. They may not detract one. They may actually create the proper mood by which one understands Krishna. And other songs may be somewhat questionable, how much one can actually remember Krishna due to very intense association with things that are sinful. Yes.
And usually I never heard any songs from the place. Usually it's just music. So in other words, music can evoke certain moods or an emotion that are helpful for the play itself. But when you put in a song, there is words written by the wrong things. So I never heard any songs.
Even music, it's a question of association. If there is some song that's very famous for inducing sinful activity, you know, just like there's certain music like the American anthem or something, you know, when you hear it, you can't help but... What's that? Yeah, you can't help but remember certain things. So there's certain songs or music, when you hear them, you can't help but associate it with a certain mood. On the other hand, there may be some songs which are more neutral that may be able to be dovetailed more in Krishna service. So that's a question of more or less of discrimination. So if you have some question about certain songs, you should probably ask the person, first of all, who's producing them and see what they think about it. Yeah.
The king of Minnesota was taking advice from the Brahmins in full faith, and then the Brahmins became corrupt and were giving them bad instructions, and then he followed them, and is he free from all the reaction?
Well, then he's a fool if he has Brahmins who are corrupt. What kind of... You take advice from a fool, you must be a fool too. And you get the reaction. Not that I'm a nice guy, I'm a nice king, but I just happen to be surrounded by a bunch of fools. They got bribed by the king. Well, the king has to have at least enough... King means he must be intelligent. If he can't even know what's going on in his own kingdom, how can, even amongst his own advisors, how can he remain king? The laws of nature will certainly kick him out. It is said that better to have a fool as an enemy, better to have a fool as an enemy than a gentleman as your friend, is that right? No, an enemy is, better to have an enemy, a fool, as your enemy, than a... Yeah, better to have a gentleman as your enemy than a fool as your friend. Because a gentleman, if he's your enemy, he won't hurt you very much. But if a fool is your friend, then he'll do all kinds he'll create all kinds of problems for you. Anything else? All right, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.